to another episode of Comic Book Obscura, the show where I dig up obscure comic book characters that you probably didn't know existed or didn't care enough to look up, in which case, why are you listening to this show? I'll tell you why, because these characters are worth at least being heard about. I say that with a question mark because I have said some of them are kind of crap, but they're interesting enough to talk about. So let's dig into it. Today's episode is on Cloak and Dagger from Marvel Comics. I'm your host, Tony. Let's get into it. So Cloak and Dagger, created by Bill Mantlo and Ed Hannigan and appearing in The Spectacular Spider-Man issue 64 in March 1982. The two mostly handled street-level crime, in particular drug dealers and like crime bosses. And teaming up with other heroes like Spider-Man, Daredevil, the X-Men, and even the Avengers. I'm talking about Cloak and Dagger because probably even more people probably don't know this, that they actually have a live-action series, but it's on some random streaming service that I've never heard of and will probably never subscribe to. If you look online, you can at least find the trailers for it. And those will probably tell you what the name of the streaming service is. But don't know what else is on that service because, like I said, I've never heard of it. But that being said, they still feel the right amount of obscure enough. Especially if you look at their comic book history, which I'm about to go into. They've never quite landed in a similar way to how Hawk and Dove from the last week's episode kind of went, where they kind of pop up from time to time in other characters' stories, but their own series has kind of it kind of petered out. Like, they kind of ran out of steam. And it's a shame because the two characters themselves, their concept is a good one, and their dynamic is interesting. But I kind of, like, you know, from what I've read on them, like their actual comics and looking up their history and stuff, it's like, well, I kind of also see why they kind of keep petering out. Why, even after a few attempts to kind of get them back into the mainstream, they just kind of can't find a place. I don't think it's impossible, but I see some of the issues, and I guess we'll get into that in a minute. Let's start with Cloak. Tyrone Ty Johnson is a 17-year-old black kid from Boston who runs away to New York City after his speech impediment kept him from preventing a friend of his from being shot by cops who mistook his friend for a shoplifter. So basically, I can't remember if it was one guy or two, but anyway, this shop got robbed and one of the culprits was a black kid, and the cops bump into Ty and his friend. And the cop thinks that Ty's friend is the one who robbed the store. And Ty had, like, he's trying to tell the cop where they've been. Like, you know, it wasn't him. We just got here, blah, blah, blah. But his stutter kept him from getting the words out. And the cop shot his friend, thinking he was resisting arrest. Ty didn't have a lot of friends because most people made fun of him because of his stutter. Something I can relate to, sort of, because I kind of stutter a lot. Not a lot, but, like, there's times where it's, like, I'm trying to say something too fast, and I kind of trip over my own words, or sometimes when I'm nervous, I do kind of, like, blah, 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 babble. So, yeah, I totally can relate to that. But with Tandy, who is, Dagger, she's a 16-year-old white girl from Shalor, man, my handwriting sucks. She's from Ohio. I can't read my own handwriting, but she's from Ohio. Her millionaire supermodel mom had no time for her, and she runs away to New York. She had a stepdad. I forget what happens to her real dad, but she had a stepdad who was actually, surprisingly, you would think he was, like, molesting her or something like that, which is, like, the default for this situation. But he actually turned out to be a decent guy. She ran away because her mom was too busy for her, which, it's white people problems. Hate to say it, but that's kind of what it sounds like. Because it's weird, too. I mean, I guess, you know, it's a stepdad, so he's like, well, I don't know if I truly trust you. But he was actually like, I get it, you know, like trying to, be some kind of a parent. But she was like, no, I want my mom to pay attention to me. I don't care about you, Chet. I mean, his name's not Chet. I'm just making that up. But yeah, so that's why she ran away. And to New York. So they both end up heading to New York. So the two meet when Ty considers stealing Tandy's purse. She stuck out like a sore thumb. Like, she was like way overdressed for a runaway. But before Ty could mug her, someone else did. And then Ty, feeling bad for considering it, gets her purse back. Tandy, being really naive, which is, I'll get to that later. There's like a, not a complete character shift as far as like which one of the two is more naive than the other, but like, and it makes sense. Like, I think one of the things I liked about these two characters is that over the course of their initial run and some of their other appearances, Tandy noticeably, like, if you read their first couple of comics and then read the stuff that comes out over the years, you notice that, like, she grows as a person as far as like she stops being like that naive, and she actually does get kind of like street smart, I guess, and just kind of more assertive. Like, she becomes like, I think they're like not even 20 yet canonically. I'm not even sure. No one ages in the Marvel Universe, like, not even Spider-Man, who's already been married like a billion times. Well, I guess he has aged, but not enough. It for someone who's probably 40, he still draw him like he's like 18. But anyway, back to them. So Ty gets her purse back, and to thank him, she treats him to a burger, and they're both at this restaurant, and they're kind of breaking down their backstories to each other. Like, you know, they find out that they're both runaways. They kind of tell each other why, and they kind of develop this friendship really quickly. Then, like, I guess on the way out, these two strangers offer Tandy shelter for the night, and Ty comes along to protect her because he's like, well, this white girl is like way in over her head, just like accepting like two. And then the thing is, like, I have volume one of Cloak and Dagger, which has like, I think, issues 1 through 5 of their, not their initial appearance, which was in Spectacular Spider-Man, but like issue 1 through 5 of their like solo series. And these two dudes do not look like two, like, if these two dudes came up to you on the street and you're a runaway and they're like, hey kid, you need a place to stay, like, you would run immediately. These do not look like, I don't get how, like, there's naive and they're stupid, and she is dumber than stupid. Like, you know, bravo for Ty for stepping in there. But he goes along because he's like, clearly these two dudes are like gonna do something like tragically terrible to this girl. So, you know, she bought me food, so I'll go along with her. And not just that, but like, he almost instantly kind of took on this protector role of her, like, after, you know, getting her purse back and everything, and they kind of became quick friends. So he goes with her, and it turns out it's they take them to a drug house, and there's a chemist there named Simon Marshall who's testing these new drug on runaways. And it turns out that this drug, like, they've been testing it on a bunch of kids, and they've all died. So after being injected with this new drug, like, they get Ty and Tandy. That's gonna be weird to say. Tyrone and Tandy. Even that's weird. Ah, darn you, Stan Lee, with your alliteration and names. They both get injected and get tossed in a room, but they escape, and they find out that they're on an island. They're trying to swim away. And when the I guess guards, the henchmen, try to chase them, their superpowers activate, and they end up taking out Marshall, who they find out later was employed by a mob boss named Silvermane. Now, I know comic book people will recognize that name immediately, but for everyone else, who are the people who would generally listen to this show because they want to know who these people are, I would think, Silvermane is a mob boss that typically is associated with Spider-Man. He's a Spider-Man villain. Now, Silvermane is an old man who is also a cyborg, but I'll get into I think I have that in my notes somewhere on how he became a cyborg. Yeah, I'll get into that later. But Silvermane has fought these two, and he's fought Spider-Man, but I feel like most people know him from Spider-Man. Okay, so they killed the guy that made the drugs and escaped. That guy worked for Silvermane, so he became a ongoing kind of protagonist for them. But let's take a moment to talk about their powers, because that's kind of a big, their characters should be, they should obviously be people before their superpowers, but superpowers are a big part of this thing, so let's get into that. So, Cloak. I guess the short way of saying it is shadow powers. His powers activated, he kind of dissolved into, like, this shadow being and fell into, like, this dark dimension. Cold, dark, terrifying place. And it took him a while at first, and he can pull other people into it, and it's basically like limbo. Like, no light, no sound, you get sucked in there, it's just cold, dark. It's like sensory deprivation, but like forever. I don't even know if you can starve to death in there. That's kind of never, it might have been touched on at some point, somewhere, but I couldn't tell you if I don't know that there's an answer for that. But eventually he finds this cloak that he drapes himself in, and eventually he kind of figures out how to reform his body. Like, at first he's just a face and a cloak, but eventually, like, over time, he learns to, like, reform his body. He doesn't have to, like, wear the cloak. Like, the cloak is no longer his physical presence. Like, he can take it off. But, okay, so his powers include that, long-distance teleportation, where he can teleport himself. He can pull other people into his shadow body and teleport them with him. He can go intangible. He can generate and control darkness and shadow. Dark Force Dimension, that's what it's called. So, use of the Dark Force Dimension can cause insanity and paranoia. And he can see the fears of others, like that people, if he touches you, he can see your fears. And he has a psychic link with Dagger. Dagger can create daggers of light that can purge addiction and corruption in others, or just inflict pain and also healing. So whatever she wants it to do. She can see the hopes of those she touches, and her light pacifies Cloak's hunger to absorb light. So, another side effect of Cloak's powers is he can absorb light. Like, when they say light, it's like someone's soul or their essence or whatever. But to keep him from doing that, Dagger produces a light that's infinite. And that's kind of, it's another one of the things that, like I said, the interesting thing about their dynamic is that the two are actually, even though they're two different people from two different places, they somehow got powers that basically have bound them together. I mean, it's a good thing that they became friends first, but yeah, they're not necessarily stuck together in that way, but like being together is mutually beneficial for them, I guess. Back to Dagger. So her light pacifies Cloak's hunger to absorb light from others, but Dagger's light is, like I said, is infinite, and she helps, and it also helps Ty remain tangible. So basically, once they figure that out, that's how he slowly became able to reform his body. Some other key notes about these two are they're born from a period of anti-drug propaganda. If you kind of surmise from Dagger's ability to purge addiction and corruption, but over time they kind of became, like I said, that was kind of the initial problem with these two characters. Like, that's kind of what spurred them into being created, but that was only going to last so long. I mean, drugs are still an issue, but that being like their main focus and gimmick, it was like you're going to run out of material for that. Like, whereas Spider-Man doesn't just focus on stopping drugs. He's like, I stop super villains. Whereas these two were like, no, we just handle, like, drug dealers and crime bosses that peddle drugs. That well was going to dry out sooner or later, which it did. Eventually what happened is when those storylines ran out, they kind of got relocated to like cameos and team-ups in other people's comics. For instance, they played a part in the Spider-Man storyline Maximum Carnage. They popped up in the original Runaway series. They were a part of Civil War. I mean, everybody was, but, you know, they were in it. They were part of Secret Invasion. They in Secret Invasion, they got pulled into joining the Dark X-Men with, what's her name? I can't believe I forgot her name. Emma Frost. And the Dark X-Men, as some may know, was formed by Norman Osborn when he became like, one, he became head of S.H.I.E.L.D. He renamed S.H.I.E.L.D. S.W.O.R.D. And then he became like the president's right-hand man. Not the vice president, but like secretary of like world defense or something. Some crazy title. I don't know. Basically, he could do no wrong. But that's, you know, that's something for another time. In their early days, like I said, they mostly hunted drug dealers, and they operated out of an old church where they were the ones who actually killed. Okay, yeah, so this is, I knew it was in my notes somewhere. So Cloak and Dagger weren't above often fools. That's another reason why I thought when they announced that Cloak and Dagger were going to get a live action series, it would have been perfect for the Netflix run of shows, because one, it would have been different. Two, you could have done some fun things with those two. They fit into the kind of street level defenders things, even though they had like actual powers. They weren't just like kung fu guys. So you could have worked around the whole martial arts fight in the corridor thing. But on top of that, they also killed fools. So you could have worked that in too, since like they, I don't know, in the first seasons of everyone's show, they were killing all over the place, which I'm not complaining, but I'm just saying it. Hey, if you need another reason to fit him in, but they killed Silvermane, and then he was revived as a cyborg. Like I can't remember who the scientist was, but he had one of his scientists take his head and attach it to a cyborg body. And everyone was like, oh, I thought you were dead, old man. And he's suddenly like, I'm not dead. And robot punch. And I'm like, what the freak? So they actually kind of did him a solid, because he was on his way out anyway. But now he's a cyborg. So it's like, well, he's not to be totally messed with. Even though Spider-Man messed him up too. So, yeah. Oh, and as far as their TV show goes, if you were wondering, in my opinion, like, because I've seen the trailer for their TV show, it kind of has a heavy CW vibe, which is kind of a shame, because I felt like, I mean, okay, their story lends itself to like kind of a melodrama kind of thing, because eventually they do kind of, you know, they start dating each other, but then like they have some on it, like they have these, they had a couple of times where they split up and they kind of had like a role reversal. So they had a time where they split up and they both became weaker because of it, and they came back together. They also had a time where they had their power swap, and that affected their personality. So like they've had some weird switcheroos. The trailer looked fine. Like I said, I'm not going to get this streaming service just to watch that. If it ever pops up somewhere else, I'll give it a look. I probably won't buy it if it comes out on DVD, because I don't care. Like, I like these two characters. Do not get me wrong. But that show didn't look that, like, the trailer didn't make the show look that good. I don't think I'm the target demographic. I think it's, like I said, it had a heavy CW vibe. I think that's the, you know, that age group that watches like Riverdale and that kind of, I think it's for that demographic. So, you know, it was never meant for me anyway. After the events of the Spider Island storyline, which is something I don't want to get into, I didn't really care for that particular Spider-Man story arc. It was kind of all over the place. But when I said that their powers got switched, that was caused by Spider-Man villain Dr. Negative from that arc. Dr. Negative, some might know from the Spider-Man game that came out this year. He's in that. During the all-new, all-different Marvel run, the two helped Spider-Man... Why did I put this in my notes? I don't want to talk about this, but I guess I'm going to. So during the all-new, all-different Marvel run, which is their reboot, because DC has had several reboots. Marvel's had a couple, but they were, like, so close together. it's hard to keep track of because there was that reboot where they renumbered everything starting back at 1. I think that was just called Marvel Now. And then I think there was another one before All New, All Different Marvel, but no one even calls it that. So, So, during the Spider-Island arc, Cloak and Dagger helped Spider-Man track down Mr. Negative, who had escaped. He swapped their powers, and they tracked him down to Hong Kong, where they remained, because they wanted to keep, I guess, which is weird. So, they track him down to Hong Kong, they stop him, they get their powers switched back, and they stay in Hong Kong. My question is, how the hell are you staying in Hong Kong? Like I said, when they eventually started, they were living out of an old church. Like, these two don't have any money. Unless, because I haven't kept up with them 100%. So, in between their original run and where they are currently in the Marvel Universe, maybe Tandy went back to her mom and, like, finished school and got a job, or you know, she's using some of that mom money or something, or she's got a modeling career. I don't really know. And granted, I guess I should know, but I don't really care. And I keep saying that I like these characters, but here I'm going, like, I don't really care. But what I mean is, it's like, that's something that should come up. It, like, if they had an ongoing series, we should have learned that. But they haven't in such a long time. Like I said, they've only been cameos where it's like, I almost feel like that hasn't even been answered. So they stay in Hong Kong, and I'm just like, who's footing the bill for this? Where are you living? Do either of them even speak Chinese or Mandarin or any kind of Asian language? There's never been any evidence to suggest that at all. So it's like, you got the bad guy, go home. Like, why are you trying to stay in Hong Kong and protect Hong Kong? So that's kind of where they are now. I'm just like, well, I guess that was Marvel's intention of doing, like, the reasoning behind that was to get them out of the way until somebody figures out what to do with them again. And, I mean, fine, but Hong Kong? Like, couldn't you just, I don't know, make them part of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, send them out in space or something, I don't know. But, questions for another time, I guess. So, I mentioned that they had some notable appearances, like in Civil War, and they were part of the Dark X-Men, and they showed up in Runaways. They also had a one-shot story in 2010, where it was just, I have that issue, actually. And a one-shot, for those of you who don't, I mean, I think it's pretty clear what that means. One-shot is a one-issue, whereas a miniseries is just like a, like, usually 5 to 6 issue short run that was, like, not meant to be an ongoing. Sometimes they lead into an ongoing series, but they usually have a set number of issues. Like, it's a singular story. I don't know why I felt like I needed to explain that, but, hey, it's all about comics, so, you know, hey, just information. They had a one-shot that was pretty good where Cloak gets kidnapped. They find out that they're not mutants. For a long time, that was kind of up in the air. People thought that when they got injected by the test drug, that it somehow sparked their mutant powers. But it turns out they're not mutants. Their powers actually were caused by the drug, which seems weird that chemicals cause this kind of reaction, like a drug caused this kind of reaction. A drug that was meant to get people high, you know, and mess them up that way, caused superpowers. Like, all right. But, I mean, like I said, they were made to be a anti-drug comic, basically. So they're just like, hey, it's a comic book universe. Anything can happen. That's the explanation for it. It seemed like the thing to do, though, would have been to lean into that idea that there were mutants and either just say that they actually were mutants, which would have brought them into the X-Men, and then you could have had your way to keep them around. Or you could have said that they were inhumans and that the drug had some kind of unknown effect on their inhuman DNA and cause their inhuman powers to manifest. I don't see how no one thought to do that, or they thought of it but decided not to. it would have been a way to keep them kind of in the mainstream arena, even if you didn't use them all the time, because there's so many Inhumans and there's so many X-Men, you wouldn't have to keep them around all the time, but if you needed them, they would have been there instead of shooing them off to Hong Kong. So as far as issues go, oh, another quick note, if anyone reads, or if anyone was looking into Spider-Ham, because the Into the Spider-Verse movie is coming out soon, in the Spider-Ham universe, there is a version of Cloak and Dagger, except they're called Croak and Badger, so a frog and a badger. I have no idea how, I guess they just pick the animal based on, like, what sounds closer to the actual character, like Spider-Man is Spider-Ham, because ham sounds similar to man, so it's kind of like that, I guess. So, I don't know what they look like. I'm assuming it's, I mean, I can't honestly imagine a badger wearing Dagger's outfit. Like, that's, I hope I never stumble on that picture. Please don't send it to me either. So, comic-wise, there's a couple of collections. I have Cloak and Dagger, Child of Darkness, Child of Light, which is issues 1-4. There's also another good one to pick up is Cloak and Dagger, Crime and Punishment. The collection I would suggest, if you can find it, is Cloak and Dagger, Shadows and Light, the trade paperback. I suggest this one because it's the one I kind of wish I had known about before I bought the one I bought. It contains issues 1-4, plus all of the Spider-Man team-ups, and the issues that have the team-ups of them and the New Mutants team from X-Men. So that's a pretty good, like, if you are interested in these characters and you want kind of a good microcosm of, like, you know, what they're like, what the two characters are like, and the kind of adventures they've had, that's probably your best bet. All right, so since I have no more answers or info on these two characters, let's get into back issue. There's this horror movie called Astral that's about astral projections and different dimensions and ghosts. It's not as complicated as it sounds if you see the trailer. It looks visually it looks interesting, and the subject matter, like, I say ghosts, but I'm not sure that's exactly what it is. I'd check it out if you're into, like, sci-fi horror. I guess I would check it out. It doesn't look like super sci-fi, but, like, just, you know, the idea of astral projecting and stepping into dimensions and trying to, and it just seems like it's a new take on what ghosts might actually be. I hope. That's why I'm interested in it. It seems like, you know, spirit ghost stuff, it's like, well, there might be an actual scientific thing behind what ghosts are and how to communicate with other worlds, or, you know, spiritual beings or something like that. That's why and visually it looks like they're doing something kind of cool with it. So I would say at least check out the trailer. It looks good. And horror movies aren't usually my jam, but, you know, like I said, the subject matter is kind of like, well, they're doing something cool with it and with sci-fi stuff into it. So, you know, maybe. The other trailer, so the other trailer is for a movie called 2.0. It took me I didn't really know how to describe this movie. So I'll say this. It's a movie about a cell phone bird fighting a cyborg. Let that sink in for a minute. Please look at the trailer. Okay, I'll say this also. It doesn't look like a good, like, an Oscar kind of movie, or, like, any movie that's gonna, like, break new grounds. But as far as, like if the concept of Sharknado even kind of intrigues you, check out this trailer. It's so freaking weird. Like, just this, and I know it's, like, a cell phone, a giant cell phone bird? What does that even look like? Check it out. Like, look at, find this trailer. The movie is called 2.0. It just kind of, I sat there watching the trailer and my brain felt like it was being scrambled the whole time, but in a fun way, in a fun way. I don't know. It's a foreign movie, so I don't know if it's gonna come out here. It'll probably pop up on Netflix. So, you know, I'm gonna try to keep an eye on it, like keep track of it, and see if when it comes out, if it'll, you know, be somewhere I can watch it, because I kind of want to. And then I guess lastly, there's some new news on G.I. Joe, which I think I talked about G.I. Joe in one of my earlier, like issue 2 or 3 or something like that. But apparently the new plans for G.I. Joe is to, it's a reboot or a soft reboot. I'm not really sure, but it's supposed to be a Snake Eyes origin movie. So that's where they're starting, which, all right, you know, this not a bad move. I mean, Snake Eyes is probably the most recognizable Joe there is. And I honestly would say from like making a movie, his relationship with Storm Shadow, and I guess if you pull from certain comic run, I think it was the Marvel run, because at one time Marvel was doing G.I. Joe. But anyway, there's Snake Eyes kind of has a link to the origins of Cobra Commander. I don't think they're going to go that route. I think this is going to be a Snake Eyes Storm Shadow origin movie that'll lead into other Joes. Now, I'm wondering if they're going to do individual Joe movies where it's like, here's the origin of Scarlet, here's the origin of Duke, which I hope they don't, because their origins are pretty cut and dry. Like, there's not a whole lot of like deep lore background for those characters. That comes later. Like, once they're Joes, they have, you know, they start having this big world building kind of like history and existence and stuff happening to them. So I guess they're leading in with Snake Eyes, and then they're going into G.I. Joe, where, you know, at the end of Snake Eyes movie, he's a Joe, and then they jump off from there. It could work. I'm not against that. That sounds cool. I like Snake Eyes. So yeah, good on him. I meant to talk about this before I got into the back issue stuff. That's all I got. That's this week's episode. This is the next issue. The next episode will be on a singular character. Maybe you'll guess it. Maybe you won't. You'll find out next week. I'll see you then. I'm out. I know who you are!